Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. Royals lose 5-4 to Cleveland last night. Back at it this afternoon at 1:10 p.m. with Danny Duffy on the mound. So let's go. Avoid the sweep. Get things right. To help us get things right on this show, we are going to talk to Buster Olney from ESPN. Jake is giggling right now and laughing, which means he had a nice conversation with Buster in the commercial break. Buster, good morning. How are you?
Good. I was just telling Jake that I thought it would be a good idea to add John Means to his fantasy team.
Right. That's right. Jake is oblivious to what's going on right now, so he needs all the help possible, because he's still trying to make fantasy football trades in the middle of fantasy baseball season. But that's fine. It's a dynasty league, and there's no offseason in fantasy football.
I'm trying to unload Aaron Rodgers like the Green Bay Packers.
Well, here we go. We'll find out about that. Buster, we have a couple of interesting topics to talk about with you. Let's start with the good stuff. John Means is a local product, graduated from Gardner Edgerton High School, and we've had him on the show before. And we've talked about, and look, the guy from Gardner Edgerton that was supposed to be the superstar was Bubba Starling. John Means, every time it seems like he'd get to the next level, he was exceeding expectations. He's made it to the All-Star game, and then yesterday he made it into history by throwing a no-hitter. And we were listening to some of his comments about his father, who passed away in August, and how he said, it's hard not even to get choked up even talking about it. He said that, you know, going out before the ninth inning, he looked to his glove, and he had his dad's initials in his glove. He said he felt like his dad was back there telling him what pitch to throw. And this is the guy that a couple of years ago he decided to create a LinkedIn profile because he didn't think he was going to last in baseball much longer. I think we're good now. I think he's solidified his spot in Major League Baseball. But what a great story for John Means, a local kid who has now made it big and threw a no-hitter yesterday, Buster.
And it was an example of the reason why I think baseball is so different than the other sports, in that you get guys who can grind and toil and work at their craft for many, many years and then get the breakthrough in their late 20s. Look, you're not going to get, a quarterback in his late 20s in the NFL who suddenly emerges as a star. You're not going to get that in the NBA where someone tweaks his jump shot and suddenly he's one of the best players in baseball. But on the other hand, you can get someone like John Means who I think he was not offered a college scholarship, if I remember correctly, drafted like the 46th round, and then works his way through, winds up being drafted by the Orioles in the 11th round, and he's never a great prospect, but in recent years he added velocity like a lot of pitchers have, and he has this unbelievable changeup, which before his start yesterday, I tweeted out there was a great number on the website FanGraphs about which pitches have the most value. And of all the pitchers in baseball, the pitcher with the most value in his changeup in terms of his production is John Means. And then you see he's got a no-hitter going. And it was as dominant a no-hitter as you're going to see when you're talking about a pitcher who threw first-pitch strikes to 26 of the 27 batters he faced, which meant that he was ahead in the count and was always putting the Mariners in a position where they were having to react to that incredible changeup that he has. And you're so happy for someone who can have a moment like that at age 28.
Yeah, certainly it's the beautiful part of the game of baseball, what happened with John Means yesterday. Now, on the flip side, Buster.
No.
The not-so-pretty part, you've been talking to us about umpires and the issues that Major League Baseball's had in that regard pretty much all season. And I have to admit, I need to get caught up on my podcasts because I haven't listened to your podcast from yesterday yet. You talked about Angel Hernandez, and that was before the shenanigans from last night. What?
And Buster, let me tell you, we were all pissed off. Everyone was about what Angel Hernandez did the night before. And so Mike Boddicker was in here, and we're thinking, boy, Shane Bieber, Brady Singer. But then Boddicker says, yeah, but we all have to wonder how Angel Hernandez is going to screw this up, because he was going to be behind the plate. That's the expectation. That's what it is. You know he's going to screw something up, so let's hope he doesn't ruin the game, but he does anyway. So there you go.
Well, what I said on my podcast actually was that yesterday, and this is yesterday, this is before last night's game, so I want to get the context right. I said that I was willing, I wanted to lead the bandwagon for Angel Hernandez, because something happened in that game two nights ago that you do not see enough of in baseball, and that is someone admitting a mistake. I give Angel Hernandez this. He admitted he made a mistake, which puts him ahead of a lot of other folks in baseball with the umpiring and the replay system this year. And look, you know, as part of my job on Sunday Night Baseball, I would go and meet with the umpires before the games, every game, and I got to know these guys. You know, the vast majority of them work their butts off, and they want to be great. And so I don't like the idea of just constantly banging on the umpires. There's no question that this year we've seen a number of circumstances in which, with instant replay, you don't understand why a call is made. And then I, you know, we'll talk to people in Major League Baseball and ask the question, why won't you admit when and put out a statement when you blow a replay call, when everyone can see that you messed it up? So it was refreshing the other day when Angel Hernandez made the mistake on that ball, hit to right center field, and it dropped and wasn't caught, and he gave an out signal that, in speaking with the pool reporter after the game, he acknowledged he blew the call, and then they did what they felt like they needed to do to try to get the call right.
Buster, did he really admit that? He said he guessed wrong, and he blamed literally everything around him.
And then he also said, well, what we did was we got the call absolutely right, which is what you want to do at the end of the day. Like, he admitted he guessed on the call, but then every other thing in the quote was about how they did everything right and how this was exactly the way it's supposed to go and this is how we were supposed to do it. And that was the part, I mean, that we, I
let,
guess.
Let me just, as leading in this moment, and again, I want to get the context right. It's got nothing to do with what happened last night, because in other situations with Major League Baseball this year, what they essentially have been saying is, no, he caught the ball in right center field. You saw the umpire signal out, stick with that call.
Right.
At least, and I, you know, and again, I don't know tone, but I did read the transcript of Angel Hernandez with the pool reporter, and they at least acknowledged that the initial call that he made was wrong, and then Andrew Benintendi's actions were tied to that, because you could tell, you know, the Royals are trying to figure out what exactly was going on. So it's a low bar, it's a low threshold I'm applying here, but that's where it's been in Major League Baseball. And at least they acknowledge that they messed up the play the other day.
Right, right. The bar is so low you have to lay down to go under it is what we're saying, because that's true. Like, we've seen examples of a play being absolutely wrong, and they still don't overturn it and still won't acknowledge it. So I get what you're saying, but so yesterday you have what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, he's confrontational. It seems like he baits players. Terry Francona the other night told him, why do these things always happen when you're around? He has the reputation to the point where we're expecting something to go south with him behind the plate in yesterday's game, and of course, all hell breaking loose. He throws Matheny out. Brady Singer's F-bombing him on the way to the dugout. He takes several steps toward the dugout and puts his hands on his hip like Superman, like, oh, you want a piece of me? And it's just, you know, it's. Tell me more about Angel Hernandez around the league and how he's viewed, and why, I guess why is someone allowed to be so bad at their job with no consequences?
When they do, this is what I've heard, that when they do written tests and when they have, and I don't know exactly how they do these evaluations, when they do the assessments of umpires and understanding of rules and applications of rules, he grades off the chart. He does great. Now, clearly, you know, they've had enough of these moments on the field where Terry's right. This stuff follows him around, which is a passive way of saying that he's responsible for a lot of these confrontations. It's different with him than a lot of other umpires, and it's not a good situation. And it really does, because what's amazing about it to me, and you hear this about Joe West too, everybody complains off the record about Angel Hernandez and Joe West. And you know what? They're here. And I got to the point, you know, 10 years ago when people would complain to me about it in baseball, you know, I can't believe that Joe West did this. I can't believe Angel Hernandez did that. And I'm like, you know what? Apparently Major League Baseball is okay with it. So I'm not going to worry about it. Like, because it just keeps going on and on and on, and there's no adjustment made.
Did you ever? I know, Buster, you got to watch every single game, so I understand if the answer is no, but did you get a chance to look at the balk that he called against Singer that kind of set all this off last night?
I saw a very quick replay, and it was only one look at it. But so just to set up your question.
I don't understand what it was. and that's one of those rules that it seems like, can you give us context on the balk call in baseball? Because I feel like, could they call one anytime they want, like holding in the NFL? Every time a pitcher throws to first base in a stadium, you know, all the fans yell balk. But I watched it, and I watched it so many times, I'm like, okay, I don't know what I just saw. I don't know what happened. And that's just one of those rules where some balks are obvious, but it seems like one like this just...
Somebody tweeted a video and said that he watches lower body flinch, then a split second later he starts his move to second, and that's what people are pointing to. But I just like when Nate's asking a question and you hear Buster say, oh boy.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this, and I heard the Indians broadcast. The Indians broadcasters are terrific, okay? They will call it like they see it. And what they said, they were like, yep, you could see a bit of a flinch there in the lower part. But, you know, it's a heartier question is how subjective is it? It's very subjective. You guys remember the umpire, Bob Davidson. His nickname among the managers was Balkin' Bob because he called far more balks than anybody else. Let's face it, there are probably a lot of rules in baseball that are like that. The check swing being another example where you could see 100 check swing calls and you're still not sure exactly what the line that crossed is. Some home plate umpires will call it for themselves. Some will rely on the third or first base umpires. And with balks, yeah, I will tell you that the Indians broadcasters who saw what they believe to be a balk. I did not get a chance to slow it down and look at it repeatedly.
I see the flinch there. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's there. You know, so, I don't
know. you don't sound enthusiastic about that.
Well, look, I mean, it's there. His leg flinched before he turned. I mean, I don't know. Should that get called? How often does that happen?
I would say this, if you don't mind me jumping in real quick. I really wish, because it's situations like what we had the last 2 days in Kansas City where it's so important to me that Major League Baseball acknowledge when mistakes are made. Because you know what? What happens in Kansas City the last 2 nights becomes part of the larger conversation of, oh my God, this is incompetent. And what are they looking at as opposed to looking at it as an isolated instance of maybe an umpire making a mistake, if I'm making sense. In other words, I think that they would absolutely help the integrity of the whole system if they would acknowledge when calls are blown to some degree. And I know that there's a feeling that, well, the umpires union would not like that very much. If Major League Baseball came down with it. I'm sorry. Somehow the NBA and the NFL have navigated to a place where they will do that. They will tell you when a call is blown, and I think that's really important because what you get if you don't do that is, you know, Mike Matheny and Singer and other folks in the Royals going home last night, you know, wondering what in the world is going on, as opposed to treating it like just one bad night.
We have Buster Olney on the line. Let's talk Tony La Russa. The White Sox are going to be coming to town this weekend, and Tony La Russa admitted that he didn't fully know the extra inning rule that would have allowed him to avoid using closer Liam Hendricks as a base runner in a scoreless game against the Reds on Wednesday in Cincinnati. Hendricks had double switched into the game in the bottom of the ninth inning, taking the number five spot in the batting order, which made the last out in the top of the frame. And per the MLB rules, as extra innings begin, the spot in the order to make the last out in the previous inning becomes the base runner at second base. But if the spot's occupied by a pitcher, then the team has the option to use the preceding player in the batting order as the runner. In this case, it would have been Jose Abreu. Should Tony La Russa, because people, I think, are looking for things for Tony La Russa to slip up on because of his age and because of the bizarre, it just seemed like a bizarre hire. Does he deserve criticism, or do you think there's other managers or players of baseball that like, what the hell is this rule? Because this is something new.
And boy, do I feel like you should just rename my segment today. Just call it The Apologist, okay?
Okay.
Buster
only The Apologist.
Exactly. I want to start with this. He should know the rule. Every manager should know the rule. That said, that since coronavirus manifested, you know, in this country, in this world, and in baseball, what you've had is a situation in Major League Baseball where it's like a backyard wiffle ball game where the rules are constantly changing, you know. Let's see. The lawn chair is first base. The frisbee is second base. The tree is third base.
Yeah,
and then you have arguments over, you know, what's foul and what's fair, and they've had to constantly change a lot of this stuff because, for example, they put in this rule, put runners at second base, you know, seven-inning doubleheaders, those sort of things. And we actually have, you know, changes with rosters and how you call players up and send them down. The other day, Joe Girardi, the Phillies manager, put in what they believe to be, you know, a roster change, with Major League Baseball, that whole system changed in the aftermath of coronavirus. The protocol changed. And so they turned it in, and then he walked up a lineup card, and then he went out to make a pitching change hours later, and it turned out that they hadn't included the name of a guy who they wanted to add to the roster. And so as Girardi goes out to call in a pitcher, that's when he realizes and is told by the umpires, nope, sorry, that guy's name is not on the roster. And Joe said, you know, it's on me. I should know that rule. But we've seen tons of instances like that where it's pretty clear that managers are not as fluent with the rules as they should be in the past. And I'll double back to where I started. He should know that rule. And you know, it certainly is embarrassing for the White Sox that you have a Zoom call in which a reporter, and, you know, a fellow knucklehead of myself, is telling Tony La Russa what the rule is. That's what happened yesterday.
Well, and because of that, the White Sox missed out on an opportunity. Well, not necessarily because of it, but they lost yesterday, so they're not in first place. It's a three-way tie between Cleveland, Chicago, and Kansas City for first place. And this homestand of the Royals, Angel Hernandez aside, is off to a pretty disastrous start, Buster. How worried should Royals fans be about this situation right now? And especially maybe considering the problems they've had in the bullpen so far in this homestand.
I wouldn't overreact to it because I think the division is defining itself as a mud bog, right? The White Sox have had some devastating injuries early in the year. You know, that dream during the wintertime of having a juggernaut, that's not going to be there. I do think of Cleveland as being like, if you think of the tortoise and the hare, they're the tortoise. Where they are, because they have Shane Bieber in the rotation, they have other good pitching, they're always going to be okay. They may not be a dominant team, but they're going to hang around there. And I think the Royals certainly are in a position where, you know, because of the dynamic talent they have, and because I really believe this, and I haven't asked Dayton about this, but I'm sure that once we get to midseason and there's a ton of relief pitching available in the trade market, if the Royals are in a position to win, Dayton has demonstrated he will try to win because that's what the Royals do. When they have an opportunity to go for it, Dayton has shown, and I think he'll be able to convince ownership, that, you know what, let's go spend some proportional resources to try to upgrade the team. I don't think any team is going to run away with it this summer.
So, again, talking about the White Sox, since they're headed to Kansas City this weekend, they went through a really difficult injury in spring training, at the end of spring training, with Eloy Jimenez, and now Lewis Robert is out. I mean, I mean, maybe out for the rest of the year. I don't know if either one of those guys is going to come back. How damaging are those two injuries to their chances?
It's a body blow. These are body blows in the first and second round of a 12-round fight, and it's going to manifest later. Now, the one thing I would say, when we look at the American League Central teams, which team is going to be most aggressive before the trade deadline? I don't think there's any doubt that it's going to be the White Sox, because they pushed a pile of chips in for this year. They hired Tony La Russa as manager. They know that there's a lot of scrutiny on them for that decision. So Jerry Reinsdorf, their owner, I think is going to green light whatever the front office wants to do in a way that, you know, maybe, as they say, the Royals will have a proportional response. The Indians are not going to spend big. The Twins will have a proportional response. And that might be a place where the White Sox distinguish themselves among the American League Central contenders.
Well, you talk about that tortoise and the hare too, Buster, and the Twins were expected to be a contender this year, and they are 7 games under .500. They've lost 2 in a row again after having that decent series against the Royals. Are they in trouble, or are they potentially a tortoise in this race as well?
Yeah, I mean, if one of the other teams doesn't grab the division by the throat, then the Twins are basically being played into it. Their problems right now, they have so many issues with their bullpen and their pitching, and some of them are surprising. We saw in 2019, you know, the first third of the season, the worst bullpen in baseball, without a doubt, belonged to the Washington Nationals. And guess what? 4 months later, they were doing a dog pile after winning the World Series. And their bullpen, by that point, was excellent. You can change a bullpen in a way that you can't change a lineup, you can't change a rotation very quickly. And as I mentioned, because this year we're not going to have expanded playoffs, we're only going to have 10 teams in, there's an expectation among baseball executives is that there's going to be a massive, massive buyer's market. Tons of relievers out there available for trade, where a lot of teams, by the time you get to the end of July, will be like, you know what, if we have this relief pitcher is hot right now, trade him like a hot stock and move him along. So there are going to be buy opportunities for the Twins to address that. There are going to be buy opportunities for the Royals, for the White Sox, for the Indians. It looks like it's going to be an unbelievably competitive division, maybe more so than the sort of competitiveness we expected out of the National League East this year, which certainly hasn't played out so far.
And Buster, more injuries. Dustin May was really establishing himself as one of the best young starting pitchers in baseball, and now he has to have Tommy John surgery. I know that the Dodgers are loaded already, and they could probably absorb that and fill that void from within, but do you think do you expect them to go out and be aggressive? They're always aggressive, but would this motivate them to go out and look for another starting pitcher? And how damaging is that injury, do you think, to Dustin May?
Well, it's devastating because, A, you know, I got to know him a little bit. He really cares, and he's worked his butt off. You know, he's drafted out of college from 93 miles per hour. He's built up his fastball to 99. And so now his career early on gets derailed, and, you know, he's going to miss the rest of this year. He's probably going to miss a lot of next year. So you feel terrible for him. The Dodgers will add. They're the only team that's over the competitive balance tax, so their ownership is going to say, go ahead and go and get to what you need. And they're trying to become the first team since the, you know, late 90s Yankees, 2000 Yankees, to go back-to-back-to-back. I am curious, the next time you speak with Mr. Boddicker, to ask him what I really have come to believe, that this whole generation of pitchers, they train their bodies to throw absolutely as hard as they can, and you know, with an attempt to throw effectively, and a lot of them can't. But I worry, you know, you have Dustin May, average fastball velocity 98.1 miles per hour, essentially launching himself at home plate every pitch. I don't think there's any question that this absolute quest for velocity around baseball is leading to a lot of these injuries, because physiologically, a lot of these guys might not be built to throw 99 over and over and over again. My God, this sport is being overrun by injuries.
Buster, we talk about that with Boddicker all the time, and he is not a fan of that approach, and obviously he was not a flamethrower himself, but we've talked to him. I mean, you know, you're talking about a guy in Mike Boddicker who has, I mean, he threw 226 innings, 236 yep. innings, 228, I mean, all these different, 261 in 1984, and obviously nobody's going to even get close to numbers like that anymore. And the other part that Boddicker doesn't like about it, he tells us all the time, is that the ball's not put in play because of it. You know, guys, it's walks and strikeouts and home runs, and I know they're trying to change that a little bit in baseball right now, but that's where Mike stands on those things.
I believe it, and, you know, I've gotten to know him, actually, I got to know him well through his longtime friend Mike Flanagan and former teammate, and, you know, and I know sort of his style of pitching that he used when he was there, and what I fear is that sort of, and you hear this from baseball executives all the time, you know, on one hand, they're contributing to this wave of get hard throwers, get hard throwers, get hard throwers, and then privately they will tell you, boy, this is not something I want to watch on a nightly basis, but this is where we are.
Buster, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. I'll try not to be as much of an apologist next week.
No, because next week we're going to talk about the Royals winning streak, and then we won't be mad. So
there you go.
Thank you. Thank you, Buster.
See you guys.
Now, Buster evens us out. Jake tries to even us out, but he just douses gasoline on the flame. So
feels like it works.
Did you eat anything good for Cinco de Mayo or no?
No. No.
You didn't allow yourself any treat?
No, I didn't.
I wasn't gonna, but then I picked up the kids from school and...
Uh-oh.
Margaritas are so close. So.
Yeah, delicious. No, I didn't.
But I maintained. I ordered the shrimp and chicken fajitas. You had the small corn tortillas. Stiff-armed the cheese.
Oh, wow. That's you know,
but I had some delicious chicken and peppers.
I don't even tell you what I ate.
What'd you eat? Say it. It's embarrassing, I'm sure. Say
edamame spaghetti with tomatoes.
I don't see the mile.
I wasn't going to eat anything, but I got home about 8 o'clock last night. And
Nate had taco night. He could have brought in some leftovers.
There's no leftovers at taco night at our house anymore.
No more guacamole?
Nope.
Or guacamole?
Yeah.
I had a bunch of that, too. I was eating that by the spoonful. Then I made Julia mad. She says I'm embarrassing because I took, you know, they give us the hot sauce.
Yeah.
And then I drank it out of the,
when we were leaving.
I go, you guys, they just brought fresh hot sauce. You're not going to eat that?
Right.
No, I drank the whole thing, which is delicious.
Of course.
You know, it really cleans you out is what the doctors say.
Is that what they say?
No, they've never said that to me, but I believe it to be true.
Yeah.
It gets you right, you know. Mm-hmm. And you go, okay. Mm-hmm. Stop, Dad. People are looking. It's in your beard now. Good. I'm happy. Hope everyone had a fun and safe Cinco de Mayo. And I hope you eat something better than Jake did, because that's infuriating right now. I can tell you that. We will be back after this on WHB.